I want to take a break from the podcast right now, and I want to give you a gift. And I want to do that to thank you for being a listener. I put my heart and soul into this podcast. I love interviewing today's experts, researchers, MDs, psychologists, sleep trainers, you name it. I hope you feel inspired to take care of yourselves and your families. And I just want to thank you for being a listener and hanging out with me. So the code PODCAST10 is going to give you a one-time $10 off code at kellylevesque.com, your next order of protein powder. You can either use that on my grass-fed beef isolate protein or on my new vegan chocho bean protein. Now, here's what I love about my protein powders. It's 3 ingredients or less. So we don't use fillers, emulsifiers, no fortified vitamins or minerals. It's easy to digest and naturally made without any enzymes or chemicals like hexane. So it's 3 ingredients. With my grass-fed beef isolate, that's 100% grass-fed beef, and it's made in the way that you would make bone broth. So just heat and water. And we dehydrate that end product to get that collagen-rich protein powder that your whole family can drink. It can be added to coffees, to smoothies, and you can get it in vanilla, chocolate, and unflavored. I want to point out that my vanilla and chocolate is made with organic vanilla bean, organic cacao, and the only sweetener used is organic monk fruit. We don't use any maltodextrin. Our monk fruit is 100% ground monk fruit, and it's organic. And with my vegan line, I'm so excited to have launched this and to have it out into the world. It's a regenerative bean from South America called the chocho bean. And the chocho bean is the most superior plant-based protein powder you can get your hands on, because not only is it a complete protein, but the process is made with heat and water only. They're crushed and soaked, and what that end product results in is an anti-nutrient-free protein powder. So you're not gonna have any lectins, phytates, or oxalates in your protein powder. Makes it super easy to digest, and it's really, really delicious and robust in cooking as well. So I love it if I want a thicker smoothie or a smoothie bowl. And I also love it in my baked goods, from my cookies to my muffins, pancakes, and breads. It's the perfect protein addition. So if you want to give either of these proteins a try, or you've already been purchasing these proteins and want to take advantage of this special deal, the code PODCAST10 is going to get you $10 off for being a listener here at the Be Well by Kelly podcast. So head to kellylevesque.com or bewellbykelly.com. Put the protein you'd like to purchase in your cart and use the code PODCAST10 for $10 off. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in. Dr. William Davis is a preventative cardiologist who is a graduate of St. Louis University School of Medicine with training in internal medicine and cardiovascular disease and advanced training in angioplasty at the Case Western Reserve University Hospitals, where he also served as the director of cardiovascular fellowship and the assistant professor of medicine. He is an author of many books, including Wheat Belly, which was one of my favorites back in the day, and his new release, Super Gut, a 4-week plan to reprogram your microbiome, restore your health, and lose weight, is out now. Today, Dr. William Davis is going to talk to us about SIBO, CIFO, endotoxemia, and how you can strengthen your intestinal barrier. We're going to learn about prolonged fermentation and a really special recipe he loves for clove green tea. Let's welcome Dr. William Davis to the show. Dr. Davis, welcome to the show. I am just so excited to have you on today to talk about all the things, SIFO, SIBO, endotoxemia, all about the microbiome and how it's changed. You're an absolute expert. And I told you before the podcast started that I was so surprised when Wheat Belly came out so many years ago that a traditional doc was stepping outside of what he had maybe learned in medical school to talk about what he was seeing in his practice and how food choices were impacting his patients' lives. So first of all, thank you so much for your work, for putting yourself out there, for writing Wheat Belly, for your new book, Super Gut, that's coming out in February. But just thank you for, you didn't have to do that. You have a full practice and a lot of clients, but I really appreciate it, because the more of us beating the drum and writing these books and sharing the science in a digestible way, the more people can change their lives. So thank you for—
Well, you're singing my song, so I'm happy to be here.
Yay. Well, I'm really excited to have you. So can we take it back to Wheat Belly? What inspired you to write that book? And what were you seeing at the time with your patients?
It started in a very odd way. It was a very kind of circuitous path, but it started with my mom, who died of sudden cardiac death. And she lived in New Jersey, where I grew up. several months after her successful two-vessel coronary angioplasty procedure. Well, and that's what I did. I didn't do my mom's procedure, of course, but I was practicing in Wisconsin. I just moved to Wisconsin from Cleveland. And I was setting up several hospitals in the new technologies, in angioplasty, atherectomy, stent implantation, all that kind of stuff. Well, it struck me just how limited it was to try to manage this serious disease in a cath lab, in a laboratory. And how I asked, how could my mom have predicted this 2 years ahead of time, 5 years ahead of time? Well, back then, as well as today, the only way really practical that's accessible to people is a CT heart scan to generate a coronary calcium score. So I set up a CT scan device in Milwaukee. It was one of the first ones in the Midwest, one of the first in the country, actually. This technology originally came from San Francisco, by the way, electron beam tomography technology. And we got that. We started scanning people left and right. You know what, Kelly? You find heart disease everywhere. Back then, people would freak out, of course, say, what do I do? Well, back then I said, well, take Lipitor, an aspirin, cut the fat in your diet, low saturated fat, exercise. This is 20 some years ago.
Yeah.
And we helped publish the data. If you do nothing, so a normal score is zero. If you do nothing, your score is, let's say, 300, it increases 25% per year. So 375. For whatever, and with every leap, you're closer and closer to dying, having a heart attack, developing symptoms that necessitate a heart procedure like stent implantation or bypass surgery. So if you do nothing, it goes up 25% per year. So what happens when you go on what my colleagues to this day still call optimal medical therapy, high-dose statin, drug, aspirin, low-fat diet, exercise? It goes up 25% per year. Did nothing. And that data is published. That's not, it's not my speculation. It is established fact through several trials. Well, but people at the, you know, street level are freaking out. Like, my scores has gone up from 300 down to 700. What do I do? Of course, my colleagues would step in and say, well, we'll do the real procedure, heart catheterization, see if you need a preventive stent or bypass, which, by the way, is malpractice, but it's done all the time.
Oh my gosh.
If the conventional solution did not work, what works? Is there anything that works? So I had to stumble about, trial and error, over several years. But it taught me all kinds of important lessons. One of the important lessons, by the way, was when you add vitamin D, you have the advantage of living in a sunny climate. I live in kind of a much northern climate. And so not only is the sun weaker here, even in summertime, we wear clothes.
Yeah. Cool. I know you said 40 degrees. You said 40 degrees in shorts. And I said, no, sir. 40 degrees. That is a parka and a beanie.
Well, you know, even if you did do that, shorts and a t-shirt, the sun's just too weak.
Yeah.
And so adding vitamin D was the first time I saw heart scan scores, coronary calcium scores plummet, dropping, say, from 800 to 400. So that was a very important lesson. But another lesson was, I rejected this idea that cholesterol is the thing we should measure, because that came from outdated, woefully outdated technology from the 1950s. And there is more up-to-date, more modern methods to quantify the particles in the bloodstream that cause heart disease. But it takes more education, and it makes it evident right away that heart disease is a disease of carbohydrates, insulin resistance, and inflammation. Has nothing to do with cholesterol, has nothing to do with saturated fat, and it certainly has nothing to do with stinking statin drugs.
Yeah.
And so the pattern that fell out time after time, virtually 100% of people who have coronary disease, whether they have stents, history of bypass surgery, or a high coronary calcium score, they all have an excess of small LDL particles, not LDL cholesterol.
Yes.
Small LDL particles.
You're looking for the LDLP on your blood test, friends. Yes, and your doctors exactly. Are not calling for that half the time that they're prescribing you a statin.
Yeah, exactly, Kelly. Yes, absolutely. Well, they'd start with a high number, let's say 2,000 nanomoles per liter, particle count per volume. And the science was clear. A lot of it from UC Berkeley, some of it from Hopkins. This was real science. And it showed that the only foods that cause formation of small LDL, grains and sugars. Period. Not saturated fat, not total fat. And so I asked people, these people are freaking out on me, right? Yeah. I said, let's give this a try. Let's take out all grains and sugars from your diet, see what happens. We'd come back, we'd repeat their lipoprotein panel, and the small LDL is typically zero. It was eradicated, not just a little better, but eradicated, usually, not always, but usually. But they'd ask me things like, you didn't tell me I'd lose 48 pounds. pounds. Mm-hmm. You didn't tell me that I'd have to stop my insulin and metformin because my blood sugar got so low and I was not going to be diabetic anymore. You didn't tell me that my rheumatoid arthritis would get so much better. I could stop the biologic and the prednisone. Yeah. And so I did this for the purpose of coronary disease, small LDL particles, coronary calcium scores, only to stumble on something. Why would removing the food advocated by all government agencies, all doctors, all dietitians, why would removing it yield extravagant? And that's why I started to ask questions that led to the whole Wheat Belly project.
Wow. I mean, it's amazing, but it's those stories of your patients having radical healing and feeling, getting off medications and feeling 10, 20 years younger, able to like play with their kids and their grandkids and have this quality of life. Like the fact that so many people over the age of 65 have multiple conditions, diagnoses, and take 3 to 4 pills a day for preventable diseases is so frustrating for me. I mean, that's why I have this practice. That's why I have this podcast, is to bring people like you on who have and see these changes. I mean, I use your protocol with a heart disease client here in Orange County. It was one of my first 12 clients. Actually, I saw him. It was my dad. It was my friend's dad. And I saw him for free when I was first transitioning from cancer and genetics into nutrition. And it had the same thing happen. His cardiologist called me to talk about what I had put my friend's dad on. And I hadn't put him on anything. I had taken him off of all of his sandwiches and all of the grains and the rice and just upped his fiber and gave him some healthy proteins. And it was as easy as that, you know, but people try to reinvent the wheel and medicate as a Band-Aid. And you've shown in your practice and through your work that that is, and through the actual studies, that that doesn't need to be the case. So I love that. And I realize you did so much work on that. And if people want to go back and read Wheat Belly, if you have any cardiovascular issues, I definitely recommend that book. But it's for everyone just to know and understand how grains affect our body. But you've made this departure and your new book is Super Gut. But I also love that it's not really a departure because we're a whole being, a whole person, and all of our organs are connected and sharing and chemicals and all kinds of things. So byproducts. How did you make this departure and why Super Gut? What was coming up for you in the science and in your practice?
Well, Kelly, as powerful as these strategies are that I articulated in the Wheat Belly books and also a book called Undoctored that made a lot of friends with my colleagues, by the way. Yeah. But people did those things and had wonderful results, but not everybody had 100%. Mm-hmm. So people would say things like, I lost 47 pounds, but I have another 30 to go and I'm stuck. I'm plateaued. Or I have type 2 diabetes. I'm off the insulin. My hemoglobin A1C, despite getting off insulin, my hemoglobin A1C dropped from 11.7% down to 5.9%. So much better, but not perfect. It's not 5.0 or less. Or they had an autoimmune disease that got better, but they're having occasional flare-ups and having to go back. So I asked, what's missing here? Well, we did follow some basic efforts in restoring a healthy microbiome, a high-potency multi-species probiotic, fermented foods, prebiotic fibers. But there was something missing. And I looked in the microbiome for better answers. And Kelly, when you start looking deeply, you start to find some astounding answers. That because one of the things that's happened to modern people is we've lost very important species. Because all of us have taken antibiotics. It's not uncommon by age 40 to have taken 30 courses of antibiotics. So antibiotic residues in food, herbicide, pesticide residues in food, glyphosate, the active ingredient Roundup is not just an herbicide, it's also an antibiotic. Food additives like emulsifying agents disrupt the microbiome. Many drugs disrupt the microbiome. Statin drugs disrupt the microbiome. Anti-inflammatory drugs like naproxen and ibuprofen. In other words, we're swinging a virtual sea of factors that disrupt the microbiome. And one of the things that happens is we've lost important species. When you restore these species, spectacular things can happen. So you're likely familiar with my favorite microbe of all, which is Lactobacillus reuteri. Lost by the great majority of people, even though indigenous people, the few remaining indigenous populations, have reuteri. They all have reuteri, as do squirrels and chipmunks and raccoons. So all mammals have it. All humans unexposed to antibiotics and other factors all have it. We don't have it. So we restore it. And all kinds of great stuff happens. One of the striking effects is you restore Rotari. And by the way, it colonized the entire GI tract, not just the colon. It sends a signal to the brain to release oxytocin, the hormone oxytocin, the hormone of love and empathy. So people will restore Rotari and say things like, you know, I like my family better. I like my coworkers better. I have less anxiety when I go to an office party. In fact, I embrace people. I love their, I seek out people's company. But there's other effects beyond the social and emotional effects of oxytocin. There's also, ladies love it because there's an explosion in dermal collagen and they start to lose their wrinkles. It takes about 8 weeks to see it visibly, but it does develop. There's a restoration of youthful muscle and strength. There's preservation of bone density, turns off appetite, desire for sweets. It causes deep sleep. I'm a chronic insomniac. I've all my life struggled to sleep more than a few hours, a fragmented sleep, watch TV, read books. I sleep now 9 hours or more straight through deep, vivid dreams like a kid. So, and when you think about it, Kelly, restoration of youthful muscle and strength, smoother skin, it facilitates weight loss too, deeper sleep, preservation. It's an age reversing effect. Mm-hmm. And people will look that way too when they share their selfies. The people often look 10, 20 years younger, sometimes more. The experience does vary, but that's one microbe, Kelly. That's the experience with one microbe. And there's a growing list of microbes that we can restore.
So this is a microbe that most of us have lost due to our antibiotic, you know, our contact with antibiotics, pesticides, herbicides. How are you recommending that we restore the specific microbe and allow it to proliferate in the gut?
So I started by getting a commercial product called Gastrus, G-A-S-T-R-U-S, and it's sold by a Swedish company called BioGaia, B-I-O-G-A-I-A. And they sell it to you, it's like 20-some bucks, but they sell it to you in very low bacterial counts because the tablets are meant for infants, so very low doses. So I wanted Rotari, I wanted these strains of Rotari in this product. So I did something crazy. I made yogurt, but not yogurt in the conventional sense. So when you ferment foods like yogurt, what you're doing is you're getting a microbe to double. So one microbe becomes two, two becomes four. Well, Rotari doubles every 3 hours. Commercial yogurt making, so the stuff you buy in the store, is fermented for 4 hours. So you can imagine if we did 4 hours, we'd get nothing. There's nothing. Right? We start with them. We want billions and billions of microbes. If we start with a few million, you got almost nothing. But by the way, that's why yogurt manufacturers add things like gelatin gums, xanthan gum, guar gum, carrageenan to thicken this thing that would be liquid if they didn't thicken it. So I changed all that. We're going to ferment for 36 hours. That allows Rotari to double 12 times. The easiest way to illustrate to your listeners what that means is think about the old riddle that kids tell. Which would you rather have, $1 million or a penny that doubles every day for 30 days, right? And kids always say, I'll take $1 million.
Yeah.
Not understanding that the penny, although it seems like it goes nowhere, 1 cent, 2 cents, 4 cents, 8 cents, by day 30 is over $5.5 million. But if you look at the curve of increase, the increase in money doesn't really get underway till about day 27, 28.
Right.
Same thing with bacterial doubling.
Okay.
If Rotari doubles every 3 hours, you don't get the really big numbers until about hour 33. So if you're doing it for 4 hours in a factory, you ain't got nothing.
Right.
So we go 36 hours. We did a method called flow cytometry, which is a mechanized way of counting microbes. And we get about 250, 260 billion microbes per half cup serving. And those big, big numbers are a big part of the reason we're getting these really big results, outsized results. So it does require a device to keep Rotari likes human body temperature, which makes sense, right?
Yeah.
So we need some device to keep it. So you can use a yogurt maker, most yogurt makers, a sous vide device for cooking meats, or some of the Instant Pots have yogurt settings also.
Yeah.
And then you make this yogurt, you eat the yogurt. But I look at it kind of like a menu, Kelly, so that because people say, oh, my God, you're talking about so many microbes. So I tell them, no. Think about it like a restaurant menu. If you go to a restaurant and the waitress hands you a menu, you don't freak out and say, oh, my God, I can't order all these appetizers and main dishes and desserts. You pick the ones you want. Same thing here. If you want smoother skin or be happier with your family, get Roteri. Mm-hmm. If you want a baby to sleep through the night, have half as many bowel movements, thereby half as many diaper changes, less fussing, less colic, and be healthier as an older child, less asthma, less irritable bowel syndrome, and having a higher IQ, restore Bifidobacterium infantis, specific strains of Bifidobacterium infantis. If you want to reduce arthritis pain in your knee or hips, get a strain of Bacillus coagulans. You can treat just like a menu. And you can also co-ferment yogurts also.
If we're all making our own yogurt and we're keeping it at room temperature, kind of like in an Instapot on the yogurt setting, how often are you eating it and adding it to, are you adding it to every meal? Is it just once a day? And how are we getting our hands on these different single strains of, or single microbes?
You know, it depends on what you're after. So one of the problems you run into with Roteri, and I hope you have an adult audience.
Yes, I do.
Is that it also increases libido and erotic dreams.
Okay. So, good times.
So I just had this every Wednesday night. I have a Zoom meet with some of my followers. So typically 70 to 100 people show up. And I asked them, I had this incredible dream after I took a big walloping dose of Roteri. I had this dream that I was in love with this woman, an intense fear, and I could see her in vivid detail. And it was an imaginary woman.
Yeah.
By the way, I woke up and had those feelings persistent in the daytime, which was very unusual. Yeah. Right. I told this my audience about this. I said, anybody else had that unique experience? And a bunch of them said, not that specifically, but I do have erotic dreams that also involve love and affection. And several of them said, so I've cut back my Roteri yogurt intake to every second or third day because I find my libido is a little bit too much.
So you're just multiplying not only microbes, but oxytocin off the charts in the brain, having these erotic dreams. People are like, what is this life?
But the only undesirable effect I've stumbled across. So in other studies, oxytocin administered by other means has never been any side effect except the rare occurrence of aggression in children with autism. That's it. Okay. But the only adverse effect beyond amping up your libido is you cry more at movies.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
I mean, I think it's more, you're just feeling more. You're getting those like oxytocin, like you said, the love and reward hormone. I mean, I'm a breastfeeding mom right now, and I'm in that stage of my life where I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and I went from being pregnant to breastfeeding, to being pregnant, to breastfeeding, and I'll probably get pregnant and breastfeed again. So I'm on that oxytocin roller coaster right now. I know how great it feels.
I didn't answer your question of where to get these microbes.
Yes, where do we get them?
So I do show in the book where to get them. And one thing we have to do is pay attention to strain. It's kind of tedious. There's a species, but there's also strains of species. So my favorite example is E. coli. So your listeners have E. coli. I've got E. coli. We all have E. coli. But what if you ate romaine lettuce contaminated by cow manure from the Central Valley of California? Contaminated by cow manure, you can die of E. coli.
Right.
So same species, different strain. So when we want specific effects, we do have to pay attention to strain. But I'll tell you that my emerging experience, I know a lot of probiotic manufacturers. Mm-hmm. Oddly, I think because of the dairy industry, they're concentrated in Wisconsin. Literally an hour drive. Several of the world's largest manufacturers are within an hour drive of my house, which is kind of crazy. And so I have access to all kinds of strains of Roteri specifically, because I know the BioGaia strains work. I believe I have a strain that's more effective, but it's not available at the retail level yet.
Okay.
But that'll come in time. Okay. And that one gives really big effects. So I think it's not, in this case, in this one case, strain may not be that important.
Okay, great. Well, you know, my fear always with making yogurt and my own fermented foods is that something's going to explode in my kitchen, or I'm going to like cause GI like disasters in my children. So I'm going to follow your recipe in the book, but I'd like to circle back because we're talking about basically introducing a strain of a microbe back into the gut that we should have that causes all these wonderful benefits. But there's so much going on in the gut right now. We have a lot of dysbiosis and we have a lot of new diagnoses. Before the podcast started, we were talking a little bit about SIBO and SIFO. These were diagnoses when I worked with functional MDs about a decade ago that maybe I'd get one or two a year. And now I feel like they're coming in floods. It's everywhere. And so can we talk about some of these diagnoses that are happening in the gut, what they are and what's happening? And I also like to touch on endotoxemia, if you wouldn't mind too. So
absolutely.
Okay.
So important. So
let's teach. I'll let you be the teacher, Dr. Davis.
Well, you know, I was guilty of thinking that SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and SIFO were rare. I was thinking, oh, no. Yeah, we all have dysbiosis, disrupted species composition in the colon. And I thought SIBO and SIFO were rare things. Well, the thing that really changed my opinion was this device here, the AIRE device, AIRE, which measures hydrogen gas. And you can map out where bacteria, not fungi, but bacteria, you can map out where they are in the GI. And as you point out, Kelly, lo and behold, it's everywhere. Even if we conservatively estimate it, given numbers, 100 million people in this country alone have it, 1 in 3 Americans have it. And I think that's an underestimation. I think it's a dramatic underestimation. But even conservatively, so we're talking about one of the biggest epidemics ever in the history of mankind.
Yeah.
And now we have, people don't need to get this device to prove it, but it is one choice you have to confirm whether or not you've got SIBO or not. So you know that SIBO means that unhealthy microbes like E. coli, Salmonella, Klebsiella, and these are stool microbes, and they're supposed to stay in the colon for the most part, but they've proliferated, outmuscled, outnumbered the healthy species, and then ascended up into the 24 feet of small bowel, ileum, jejunum, duodenum, stomach. And what's remarkable about that is now you have trillions of microbes inhabiting all 30 feet of the GI tract. The colon has a very thick 2-layer mucus barrier because that's where microbes are supposed to be. But the small bowel has a much more fragile, thin, single-layer mucus barrier. And so microbes are better able to breach that barrier, get entry into the small bowel lining and even into the bloodstream, but especially your breakdown product. So if we have 30 feet of bacteria turning over rapidly, because they don't live decades, they live hours. Sometimes minutes. So there's very rapid turnover of these microbes. When they die, they release a lot of their debris into the bloodstream. And that's what you're pointing out is endotoxemia. So when that was finally described by Dr. Patrice Cani in Belgium in 2007, it changed the definition of virtually all common chronic conditions. It tells us now that microbes in the GI tract can export their effects experienced as, say, rosacea. Or psoriasis in the skin, or as joint pain, muscle pain, or fibromyalgia, or as depression or Alzheimer's dementia in the brain, or as joint pain and swelling as rheumatoid arthritis. So I would argue that virtually all common chronic diseases that we're familiar with, obesity, hypertension, type 2 diabetes, autoimmune, neurodegenerative disorders, all have to be redefined in light of this major contribution of the microbiome.
Yeah. I mean, it is amazing because the conversation was really around the first conversation was around leaky gut, people being like, oh, what's coming through our intestinal barrier into our bloodstream? We're having, you know, antibody reactions to that or immune reactions to that. But now there's this layer that you're talking about that it's not just the food that we're eating that's seeping through our epithelial lining. It's not just the mucus breakdown and the intestinal permeability that's there, but it's now that these microbes and their byproducts are seeping into our bloodstream. And it's an even added layer of the body's response to that in the form of the side effects you just mentioned, whether it's psoriasis or rheumatoid arthritis. So it sounds like we have a lot going on. We have bacteria and fungus in the small intestines where we don't want it, in SIBO and SIFO. We have intestinal permeability issues or leaky gut, the breakdown of the mucus layer, or maybe because it's in the small intestines, the mucus layer isn't as thick, like you mentioned, and these byproducts or toxins and our food, everything seeping into our bloodstream and causing an issue. So that feels really overwhelming for the listener, I'm sure, because you're like, wow, I try my best to eat clean and be active, but I could still have all these other side effects. And you saw it with your patients. They had a great, you know, went from 11% A1C down to 5.5 or 6, but never made it back into that really healthy level. So there's this level of chronic inflammation and disease that's starting in the gut. So how do we start to heal that? How do we start to increase the mucus layer of our intestines and heal so that we don't have to deal with these byproducts floating around in our bloodstream and causing these issues?
I think it helps to identify and manage all the things that we're exposed to that got this process started in the first place. So we try to minimize. You can't avoid necessarily antibiotics. If you get really sick with pneumococcal pneumonia, you need to think an antibiotic. Right. But try to minimize. Don't take them for trivial reasons. Like you have an upper respiratory viral infection. Don't take an antibiotic just in case. Those kinds of situations. Try to get organic foods that have minimized herbicide, pesticide residues. Get whole foods, not foods with long lists of ingredients that have disruptive additives like emulsifying agents like polysorbate 80 and carboxymethyl cellulose. Avoid synthetic sweeteners like aspartame, sucralose, and saccharin. Avoid those drugs, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, the stomach acid blocking drugs, statin drugs, and probably a long list of other drugs too, though the science has not been sorted out. A drug company does not need to do a microbiome study in order to have a drug approved. So we often don't know what these drugs do to the microbiome. But we start by kind of cleaning up our lives. And then I look at the microbiome like a garden. So that's like preparing the soil. It's getting rid of the sticks and the weeds and the rocks. Now we're going to plant some seeds. The best seeds by far are fermented foods. And that the best science just came out recently from the Sonnenbergs at Stanford.
Love them.
They just published a very important paper that showed frequent consumption of fermented foods, whether it's kefir or kimchi or kombucha or veggies you ferment on. It's a virtually no-cost process, reestablishes the better organisms, better species. And what's curious about their study is that the species that emerged from that experience were not the species that came from the fermented foods. So it's not quite clear how that happens, but fermented foods, hands down, are the best things you can do. Probiotics are kind of helpful. Unfortunately, the current crop of commercial probiotics were not crafted in the smartest way. They're kind of haphazard collections of species, strain often not specified, by the way. So they're getting better. My favorite, and I have no reason to tell anybody this, I have no relationship with the company, is Symbiotic 365, because it has several keystone species, that is, species that help other species. It's like plankton in the ocean that supports whales and jellyfish. Without plankton, you got no whales and jellyfish. So having keystone species restored, it's got a keystone species of rotori, gasseri, and some others. And then, of course, feeding yourself things that nourish microbes, prebiotic fibers, polysaccharides, polyphenols. These are things in vegetables, onions, alliums, garlic, inulin powder as a convenience, legumes, root vegetables. And those are important too. But it's not enough. Of course, as you know, if you have SIBO or SIFO, fungal overgrowth too, doing all those things probably won't undo the mess that most of us have created in our GI tracts. And so, unfortunately, as you know, if you go to John Q Primary Care or even the gastroenterologist, they say, there's no such thing. Or there's nothing wrong with you. Or I didn't see anything in the scope, so there's nothing wrong with you. Or did you consult Dr. Google again? Right?
Yeah. Or it's just, or they'll just bucket it and say, oh, you're constipated or you have diarrhea. That's just IBS. And just, you know, either take some Miralax if you're constipated, and here's like a pamphlet on how you can eat whole grains to balance your body.
Which is tragic. It's tragic. Because not only does it leave you with let's say bloating, diarrhea, or some food intolerance like FODMAPs or nightshades, it also means you're going to experience the long-term consequences of uncorrected SIBO, which can include neurodegenerative disorders like dementia and Parkinson's disease and diverticular disease, which is a disaster, colon cancer, autoimmune. So in other words, if you bury your head in the sand or someone fails to take action, it can lead to long-term, real serious trouble. So one thing you can do, of course, is test with the air device. You don't have to, of course. You know that you can look for what I call telltale signs of SIBO and SIFO, such as fat malabsorption in the toilet, fat droplets in the toilet, skin rashes that don't respond to steroid creams like eczema in particular is a really good sign for fungal overgrowth. And there are conditions that are so commonly associated with SIBO, I think it's safe to just manage the SIBO, like fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, neurodegenerative disorders, autoimmune. If you have any of those conditions, you could pretty safely assume you've got SIBO driving a lot of it. Now, if you do have a smart gastroenterologist, one who's well-informed, he'll give you a prescription for rifaximin, which has about 40 to 60% effectiveness, and they almost never tell you how you got it, how to prevent recurrences, which are very common. So there was a time we were using herbal antibiotics, the two that actually have a little bit of evidence, the candibactin regimen, the FC-cytal dysbiocide regimen. But I've been doing something a little differently, Kelly, lately. So using this reasoning, if you and I take a commercial probiotic and you have SIBO, let's just say you tested positive on the air device or you did formal H2 testing, but you know you have SIBO. If you take a commercial probiotic, will it go away? No.
Yeah.
It might reduce the bloating a little bit, might reduce diarrhea a little bit, but it won't go away. So I asked a different set of questions. I asked, well, what if we chose microbes with specific characteristics, such as they take up residence in the small bowel? That's where SIBO occurs. And they produce what are called bacteriocins, natural antibiotics effective against the species of SIBO. So I chose three. I chose a strain of Lactobacillus gasseri. I chose two strains of Reuteri, and I chose Bacillus coagulans. We co-ferment, make a yogurt. I call it SIBO yogurt. Now, this is preliminary, but out of 30 people who've done this, 90% have converted to negative H2. So I think it works.
Wow, that's huge. I feel like SIBO is the most frustrating thing ever because exactly what you just said, I can't tell you how many clients from 2017, 2018, I get that email, my SIBO's back. You're like, you can only do, they do the antibiotic round or they do the antibiotics or they do the herbals for a really long time. They do the FODMAPs diet. They've cut everything out. Then everything kind of starts to go back to normal life and it comes back with a vengeance. So frustrating.
One of the things we've been doing, I think works, this is once again, anecdote. We have several clinical trials planned in the next 2 years. This one's not one of them, but maybe later in future, do the SIBO yogurt type of, we probably won't use yogurt for the clinical trial. It's too variable. We'll probably just use the microbes themselves.
Right.
But the SIBO yogurt seems to work, but I also have also been asking people to use the Reuteri chronically.
Yeah.
After the SIBO is gone, because of those features that it takes up residence, the upper GI tract produces bacteriocins. And it seems to prevent recurrence of SIBO, not always, for a lot of people. The gasseri, likewise, the gasseri is this bacteriocin powerhouse. It produces up to 7 bacteriocins that kill E. coli, salmonella. You know, here's a crazy story for you. So one of the world's largest probiotic manufacturers is literally 45 minutes from my house. It's called Biosource. Yeah. And the guy who runs it is a microbiologist named Suresh.
Yeah.
And he tells me, I confirm this with other microbiologists, when they want to clean their fermenting vats, he uses Lactobacillus reuteri to clean the vats because it kills the pathogens.
Wow.
So I go, what? They use it as a cleaning microbe. So it's very effective in killing off stool microbes, ones we don't want. So I think it's been instrumental in keeping SIBO recurrences away from everybody.
Well, and it's so great because when you look at the past, when we used to just say, you have a bacterial infection. Here's a bunch of antibiotics. And we learn that we all have trillions of microbes that live in us and on us. And they play such a critical role in, you know, short-chain fatty acid production, whatever, intestinal permeability, like all of that, to say there's, we don't know, it's going to kill everything, but we're just going to throw this at your bacterial infection, to then now understand like, wow, we can't really have a strike mission against the bacteria that we want to kill, but that there are microbes out there like Rotari that do this for us. Like it makes, it's a gentle way of rebalancing the microbiome in a non-aggressive way. And I think we are coming to terms with the fact that that is going back to the way your grandma ate whole foods from the ground without the quick fixes of herbicides and pesticides, without the antibiotics. We have to undo all this stuff that we we've relied on, these quick fix band-aids, for the last, I want to say, like at least my whole entire existence, almost 40 years. Like that's a, it's a lot of work we have to do to get people back to baseline.
It will take generations, sadly, Kelly. Yeah, we have so much work to do. And by the way, you know, I'm so grateful that you have shows like yours, because you may have noticed that people like you and me are no longer welcome on broadcast TV or major print media because of the influence of Big Pharma. They have essentially squashed our ability to be on shows like Dr. Oz or CBS This Morning, because there's too much money in direct consumer drug advertising, and they do not want people like you and me who could might antagonize their advertisers.
Right. Absolutely. No, that it's a lot has changed in the last few years in regards to even what, I mean, not that it's scripted, but if you get a chance to be on television with your book, they cherry pick the topics that they want you to talk about and what they're excited about. And it's, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that people have to dig for science nowadays and really have people they trust like you. I mean, the fact that you do a Wednesday call, I'm going to link to all this in the show notes so that people can buy your books, get the air device, look into the microbes that they need for their family, learn how to make your prolonged fermentation yogurt, and maybe jump on board your Wednesday call, because this is the way that people get information to change their family's lives. And there are people, like you said, one in three, probably more, sitting out there with SIBO or SIFO that have been misdiagnosed that are dealing with that breakdown internally, and we need to prevent it, or at least fight back with SIBO yogurt or something, because it's just, yeah. Like I said, we do have a lot of work to do, but you're really leading the charge. And I'm so thankful that you're here to talk about it. So let's talk a little bit more about your book. I heard that there's a clove green tea in there. What is that for? What other super recommendations for a super gut do you have?
So as you know, if you have dysbiosis in the colon, or you have SIBO or SIFO in the small bowel and colon, part of the disease process is disruption of the mucus barrier. And as a result, people will often have a lot of bloating, diarrhea, abdominal discomfort. And so one of the ways to accelerate healing and recovery is to ingest things that strengthen the mucus barrier. You know, we don't think about mucus too often, except maybe when you have an upper respiratory illness and you cough it up.
Yeah.
But just using plain, simple reasoning, Kelly. So the eugenol of clove, which is a terpene, has been shown to increase the thickness of the mucus barrier dramatically. The catechins of green tea, epigallocatechin and others, have been shown to cross-link the proteins, the mucin proteins in mucus, converting mucus from a semi-liquid to a semi-gel, so much more sturdy, much more strong. And then lastly, we throw in some FOS, fructooligosaccharide prebiotic fiber, because it cultivates Acromantia, Acromantia mucinophila, which is a keystone species that helps rebuild your mucus barrier and supports other species. So we make a tea out of it, a tablespoon of cloves, whole cloves, bring it to a boil, let it simmer maybe 10 minutes or so, put a green tea bag in it or two. Trader Joe's has an excellent one, by the way, because it has a high quantity of green tea catechins. Not all green tea has a lot of green tea catechins. You can use matcha also.
Okay.
And then a teaspoon or so of FOS, you have to pour it through a strainer and you sip it. And it is spectacularly healing. It's immediate for a lot of people. And I had some really interesting experiences. I had one person who told me for years, he had this dialogue in his head saying, you're incompetent. You don't know what you're doing. You don't belong here. That kind of self-doubt dialogue with himself. He drank the tea. It stopped immediately. Well, that's not proof. So he's drinking, thinking, wow. And holidays come. He forgets to drink the tea. All the self-doubt comes back. He drinks the tea again. It goes away. When you have on again, off again, on again, off again, it's pretty good evidence of a cause-effect association. So I've seen some really cool things happen with this clove green tea that are virtually immediate or very fast acting.
I know. I love that because it really, all the ways that we can increase this mucus barrier. And I'd love for you to explain the thickness of the mucus barrier. I know you said that it's twice as thick in the colon, but what other things we can do to thicken that mucus barrier and prevent intestinal permeability? Because like you said, it's, if everything's in there, whether it's SIFO or SIBO or microbes that are giving off byproducts that could end up in our bloodstream and cause these issues, what we can do is really important to me and sharing that with our audience. Like you said, adding fermented foods, making a yogurt, making this tea, that's the kind of stuff that our listeners can take away and start using immediately, like you said, for immediate results.
Well, just bringing back healthy microbes, that helps a ton, because those healthy microbes, when you feed them with the prebiotic fibers, polysaccharides like those in mushrooms, the polyphenols in brightly colored vegetables and fruits, all those things nourish the good guys like Acromantia and Fecalobacterium. And so they produce metabolites that help the intestinal barrier heal. So for instance, if you get legumes, the galacto-oligosaccharide prebiotic fiber in legumes like white beans and black beans and chickpeas and lentils, that causes Fecalobacterium. As you know, these names, you and I don't make
I'm
names,
so surprised that you can just, I mean, this is your science, but you are just, yeah. All the microbe names.
So when you get those prebiotic fibers, one of the species, a very important species that proliferates is Fecalobacterium prausnitzii, which is a major producer of a metabolite called butyrate, which is incredibly healing to the mucus barrier and to the intestinal lining. So just restoring healthy microbes, fermented food, feeding them with those prebiotic fibers and other factors kind of fixes it for you in many ways. I like the clove green tea just because a lot of people are in pain. Right. They're having abdominal discomfort, diarrhea, and it's a way to get relief faster. Mm-hmm. But most of the efforts to rebuild the microbiome are things that unfold over weeks and months, and it can be a lifelong effort also. Mm-hmm. It can't just stop after 3 months and hope everything stays. You really have to work at this with your fermented foods and your prebiotic fibers.
It is a constant relationship with your plate, that every single plate offers up the opportunity to feed microbes and proliferate those in the gut to prevent these endotoxemia and mucus breakdown and all the issues. I mean, symptoms can come back when we, like you said, when you dip back into those processed foods, when you dip back into the foods that are covered in pesticides and herbicides and antibiotics and all that stuff. I'd love to hear about day in the life of you to support. So just so everyone can have an idea of what it looks like plate to plate to support your microbiome and to have a super gut.
We know it helps to recall that those of us who are free of gliadin-derived opioid peptides, that's the wheat belly issue, that is the protein in wheat and grains, gliadin, people say gluten, but it's gliadin within gluten, yields opioid peptides that are potent appetite stimulants. So we banish that, so there's a big drop in appetite. And then we restore rotari, lactobacillus rotari, and the oxytocin effect suppresses appetite even further, especially for snacking and junk food. And so most of us fall into a habit of eating only occasionally, such as maybe a large meal at 11 a.m., mm-hmm. a small meal at 3 or 4, and that's it. Yeah. And this is not push the plate away. Oh, I'm going to be, you know, intermittently fasting or time-restricted eating. It's just a natural pattern a lot of us fall into. So it means for me, I'll have eggs and sausage with some source. I try to include both the fermented food and a source of prebiotic fiber in every meal. Because, you know, if people say, oh, it's too much, But you know, if you make it a habit, if you make sure that there's some green peas around or some lentils in your soup or some black beans or 2 teaspoons of England in your coffee, or if you make it a habit, it becomes just effortless.
Yeah.
And so dinner is stir fry or something like that, but make sure there's some shallots or garlic or onions, asparagus. So it's really not that tough. But I try to include one of those fermented yogurts every day also. And by the way, a lot of people try to avoid dairy. You can make these things without dairy. Coconut milk is an easy way, but there's several additional steps you have to follow to use coconut milk. We use guar gum to thicken it and prevent separation. Because if you don't, the fat will separate and is not very tasty.
Mm-hmm.
You can also ferment with these microbes. You can also ferment other things. A very forgiving medium is hummus. Very easy to ferment. I've got some Bacillus subtilis fermenting in hummus on my kitchen counter. Another one people might like is Saccharomyces boulardii cider. Very easy. I use the branded product Florastore, but you can buy it at the Walgreens or something. Take a capsule, pour it into apple cider. Now, it has to be apple cider, not apple juice, apple cider that has no preservatives, so no potassium, benzoate, or any of that stuff, just plain apples.
Okay.
Pour a capsule into any volume of apple cider. Try to keep it easier for you because you're in a warm climate, tough for us because it's always cold here. So I put it in my oven, turn the oven on briefly, 45 seconds, every 4 to 6 hours, or turn the oven light on. You just want somewhere around 80 degrees Fahrenheit. And in 48 hours, you've got this effervescent, delicious, tastes like apple soda.
I love it.
And the fermentation process cuts the sugar by over half. So it's no longer very sugary. We drink a quarter cup a couple times a day. And you get all the benefits of Saccharomyces boulardii. When you buy the Florastore product, there's something like, I think, 6.5 billion, something like that, microbes per capsule. We're going to get more like 40 billion per quarter cup serving. And so what we're doing here is we're magnifying the benefits. In this case, helps bring bacterial strains back in line. It suppresses fungal overgrowth. I wouldn't use this as a treatment for SIFO, but it helped prevent recurrence. It can help it from occurring in the first place. So it's just a real easy, fun, tasty way to get Saccharomyces boulardii.
This is great stuff. Do you feel like, how long did it take for you to feel comfortable fermenting your own foods? And when it comes to buying fermented foods, do you trust kombucha off the shelf or fermented sauerkraut from Whole Foods? Like, how does that play into your diet?
You know, when you're manufacturing things, you keep your fermentation time as short as possible.
Right.
Because, you know, if you had a shoe factory and it took you a week to make a pair of shoes, you can't sell very many. But what if it only took 30 minutes? Well, you're going to sell a ton more shoes, right? So the same process here. They will abbreviate fermentation time so as short as possible. So what I do when I buy something that's fermented, whether it's sauerkraut or kimchi, is I leave it on the counter for 3, 4, 7 days, something like that. And you know, people think, oh my God, it's going to go rotten.
Well,
keep it covered. Keep it covered. Don't let fungal in the air get in it. And it does fine. And you increase the microbes that way. A lot of food fermentation can occur at room temperature as opposed to some of the microbes we use that enjoy human body temperature. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these things can ferment right on your kitchen counter. And so I had kimchi. I have a batch now. I left it on my counter for a month. It was fine.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, I think I'm going to start with the yogurt and maybe leaving a bag of my favorite farmhouse kraut or wild brine kraut on the counter and just give it a little extra time to ferment. But those are the easy ways that I add those things into even my toddlers.
Since you're a mom, can I tell you about Bifidobacterium infantis?
Please. Because my children do have eczema too, which is...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, something we've had to work through, and fermented foods have really helped with that. And I mean, they can't do dairy or egg, but we're hoping to eventually bring that back. We'll see.
Well, there's a very interesting collection of experiences from UC Davis in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And so they explored this one strain of infantis, Bifidobacterium infantis EVC001, which is available commercially as a product called Evivo. EVIVO. I have no relationship with the company, just a cool product.
Right.
Once again, these effects may apply to other species or strains of infantis, but we don't know that. So you go with the strain that you know has these effects. Well, it's become clear that 90% of newborns don't have this very important keystone species because, as you know, babies are given antibiotics at time of birth to prevent beta streptococcal infection. Mom is given antibiotics, even with a vaginal birth, especially if there's an episiotomy. So everybody gets antibiotics in the hospital for birth. So, and mom may not have that microbe to pass on to the child. Even if it's delivered vaginally, even if mom breastfeeds, she might not have it herself. And so the UC Davis people published data to show that restoration of this microbe, not carried by 90% of children, causes babies to be much more likely to sleep through the night, take longer naps, cut average number of bowel movements per day from 4 to 2, so fewer diaper changes, less colic, less fussiness, and then as bigger kids, less asthma, less type 1 diabetes, less autoimmune disease, less IBS, and higher IQs. Wow. So they tell you, the company, Avivo, says, all right, take some of the probiotics, express some breast milk, feed it to the child. And what that does, by the way, is it when you restore infants to the baby, it dominates their microbiome. Like 90% of all species are infants in a newborn and for the first few months. And infants allows the infant to digest milk oligosaccharides, human milk oligosaccharides, which, by the way, are not present in formula. So it's a curious situation, Kelly, where humans produce this human milk oligosaccharide for the infant, but the infant can't digest it unless it has infantis. So but I that's what their science tells us. But I say, this is go even one step better. Get infantis, make yogurt out of it like we do. Dairy or non-dairy, get these super high counts, and mom consumes it while she's pregnant. Thereby, mom populates her GI tract and the vaginal canal, birth canal, and breast milk, and she gives it to the baby at birth and afterwards with contact, breastfeeding, etc. You can still give the baby the probiotic, but mom is giving the baby the right from the start in the context of her broader microbiome. So I think it's a better way to do it that way, but it's such a big, my son is an expectant father also. So I've got his new wife on the stuff also.
What a lucky lady to have you as a father-in-law. I feel like, I feel like this tip is going to make me have a super baby for number three. Super gut and a super baby.
Yeah, let me know what happens.
Definitely. I mean, it's something that was interesting with Sebastian, his birth, he did get antibiotics at birth. We had like our pretty traumatic first birth with our first son, and our second son, his delivery was really easy and he didn't show any signs of eczema the way that his brother did at those first, it was like the first 6 weeks when Sebastian had rashes everywhere. And we could tell like his body was just, you know, he had such an awesome labor or such an awesome pregnancy, no complications, ate the best I ever could, you know, just had or felt really good about it. And unfortunately had some hiccups in the beginning and then had that major eczema and rashes. And then with Toshin, our second, it didn't actually manifest until he started eating real food. So around 6, 7, 8 months, it started just like around his ankles and it would flare a little bit on his cheeks when he ate dairy and when he ate eggs, which were the triggers for his brother as well. But, you know, of course the nutritionist in me and the interviewer with people like you, I'm like, all right, there's something going on in my gut or that I've passed to them that they're having an inability to digest this type of food and it's a trigger for them. And you know, children's guts are leaky for the first like 3 years of their life is what the research shows. You know, they're so much more vulnerable to all of the things we're talking about, antibiotics, herbicides, pesticides. So it's interesting to me. I remember that Avivo product with Sebastian, I tried it and it seemed as though his flares got worse, but we were in a really hard place. It was like right in the beginning when it was out of control. And, you know, Sebastian doesn't have any signs of eczema at all right now as a 3-year-old, which is awesome. Right. You know, I feel really good about that. It was a long road. As you know, skin issues seem to be the hardest because you really have to stay diligent and you have to be committed to making changes for a long time. But yeah, we're on that road again with Toshin and we're working our way back. But I may Vivo a try myself and see if that influences it. Would you get the strain specifically from a Vivo, or is there another company that we could get it from to ferment in yogurt?
You know, there may be others, but there's insufficient evidence for their effects. So the UC Davis people and Aviva had done a really good job in validating their microbe.
Great.
The other microbe, very limited evidence. So whenever you get the situation, go with what we know works.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Well, oh man, you have been great today, Dr. Davis. So many awesome tips. Thank you for breaking down SIFO and SIBO, endotoxemia, and really giving us some tools to include fermented foods and prebiotic fibers on our plate. I'm going to link to all of your awesome recipes, your book, your Wednesday night call, and we'll make sure that everyone has access to this amazing new book in February. So thank you for taking the time again outside of your practice to write it and helping us all and live healthier lives.
And thank you, Kelly. And thank you for what you're doing, because what you're doing is truly very, very important.
Yeah. Well, we're all just really excited to have experts like you willing to jump on the podcast with me. So thank you so much for your time. Where can people follow along online, socially, so that they can keep up with you?
Just in the last literally couple of weeks or so, I converted my Wheatbelly blog that's been visited 33 million times. I changed to be more all-encompassing to Dr. Davis, drdavisinfinitehealth.com. Okay. And it's kind of a one-stop shop for all my conversations.
Great. Well, we'll direct people that way so that they can follow along.
Okay. Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Be Well by Kelly. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at bewellbykelly.com and follow me on Instagram at bewellbykelly. I would love if you picked up my books, Body Love and Body Love Every Day. They're sold on Amazon and at all major booksellers.